Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I am your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director here at the Anthony Michael Group, where we help build companies and careers across the greater MedTech ecosystem, from areas like regulatory affairs to quality to on the commercial side, market access, reimbursement, et cetera. And today, I'm excited to be joined by Mr. Naveen Agarwal. Naveen is the founder at Creative Analytics Solutions. Now, if you're in MedTech and you browse LinkedIn, chances are you've seen some of Naveen's content, and especially as of late, centered around risk. Now, Naveen comes to the show today with over 25 years industry experience. He's worked for well-known organizations like Kimberly-Clark as a research scientist and for J&J in both business analytics and quality management. Now, over the last 7 years or so, he has led Creative Analytics, which is a consulting organization providing quality systems expertise to medical device organizations through its trademark platform called Exceed Innovative Quality Solutions, really providing consultative services across four broad areas: customer experience, regulatory compliance, risk management, and quality culture. Now, a lot of people would say even more exciting, Naveen has been building out his Let's Talk Risk program, which in essence is where he has been sharing practical and useful knowledge and working with professionals across MedTech to build competence through case studies, conversations, and community on all things risk. So without further ado, Naveen, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. I want to start by saying thank you for being here. We've been in touch for some time, and I know this has been a while in the making to get this together, so I'm glad you're here. And I want to start off by asking you, tell us more. What's going on with Let's Talk Risk? Because there's a lot of exciting things happening.
So Let's Talk Risk has been going on for about a year or so. You know, I feel like risk management as a whole, people find it difficult in the industry when it comes to practicing risk management, right? When it comes to actually doing it, people find it difficult. And risk is complicated, can be confusing, and it can mean different things to different people. So what I realized was, unless we start to talk about risk in a simple way, using examples through case studies, engaging people in our conversations and building a community, I felt like we would not make much progress. So I went all in. Beginning last year, I went all in into this effort and started building this platform, what I call Let's Talk Risk, which is a combination of all the content that I produce on a weekly basis and also my Let's Talk Risk conversations on LinkedIn every Friday. They're very casual and informal conversations where we just, it's not a webinar or a lecture, we would just get together and talk and share information and common challenges. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create a conversation around risk, not necessarily, you know, classroom lecture or a training program. They're important. They're definitely important, but we have to have an ongoing conversation. That is what the whole idea is about.
That's amazing. And so let's kind of, with that in mind, I mentioned your background. Look, you grew up as a scientist, you worked in quality management, you've got an extensive risk background. What do you think are the biggest pitfalls where medical device manufacturers are perhaps not getting it right when it comes to risk management programs?
Yeah, so let me first start by saying that we have just awesome people in our industry. Like, some of the best people I've worked with in my career are in the medical device industry. Yep. We have great engineers. We have great quality people. We have great regulatory people, great leaders. Somehow in our system of doing things, we have treated traditionally risk as something else, something different. And of course, there are pockets of excellence in the industry. I'm not saying that they're not doing a good job, but in general, people treat risk as something other, something we have to do for the purpose of compliance and maybe documentation. You know, our auditor wants to see our risk assessment. Let's go show them some. That is not the essence of risk management, because it has to be practiced. It has to be done early through development and after development when the product is launched throughout the life cycle. That's what the standards are talking about. But I think the real big challenge that I see in the industry right now is changing the mindset around risk as sort of a business practice, not necessarily something for compliance. That's number one. The second, the thing that I will mention here, Mitch, is because of this attitude and approach to risk, we are not able to actually leverage the power of risk management early in the design phase. We do it as an afterthought, right? Hey, we are about to launch. Where is our risk management file? We need to have that. But what if we could do it upfront? And all along the development process, as we learn more, we take the right steps, take the right controls in place. In fact, we can plan our clinical studies based on an early assessment of risk and be more productive. So we are not able to do that, right? And finally, I think most importantly, we should realize that risk or design or engineering has been led by R&D in our organizations mostly, for good reason, because all the products are very complex. I think there's a need to include the voice of the patient early on through engagement and cross-functional collaboration with medical safety. It has to happen. And now a lot of people might say, we are small, we are a startup company, we're a small company, we don't have resources to have MDs on our payroll. We have to find a way to either have a panel of experts that we can talk to early on to understand the patient experience. We have to start doing that. I think that those are some of the really key points I would like to make for our listeners to think about when it comes to risk management in medical industry.
It's funny, some of the things you mentioned, because I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we do a lot recruiting in the regulatory and the quality space. And I would say historically, regulatory has been looked at as the redheaded stepchild, the necessary, if you will, the check the box, if you will. And then over the last several years, I think executives have really started to hopefully understand the fundamental importance of having an early regulatory strategy and not as an afterthought, right? And trying to get regulatory involved earlier and have regulatory as part of the executive at the executive table. And it's so funny listening to you talk about risk management because it's almost like the exact same thing. So what's your opinion? Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's seen as kind of like an afterthought?
I can make some guesses and maybe share some of my personal experience. Like when I started my career at J&J, I actually was in R&D. I was not in quality organization. And up until then, close to 15 years or so, I had worked only in R&D and product development. In fact, I had no idea about the regulations or any of these ISO standards. I was doing risk management by building the product. I was doing risk management in my head, right? It wasn't a discipline. It wasn't a structured process. I was used to doing statistics, Six Sigma, all the best practices for product development, which I think most people are still doing in our industry. Now, when I transitioned into the quality, which is probably another story we can talk about, purely by chance, that was the first time I was confronted with all these big regulations and requirements. And really the first touch point for risk as a structured process was in the regulatory context, in the regulatory framework. Here's an ISO standard, you must have a procedure, you must have these forms and templates, and that's what risk management is about. As an engineer, this idea was very sort of difficult for me to understand. And I think this perception still remains in our industry that risk is in the context of regulatory requirements for the purpose of regulatory compliance. That is still the perception in practice. And I think it is beginning to change a little bit, but not quite. So I went through this experience, lived through this experience when we would talk about risk management. You know, engineers would say, what are you talking about? We are already doing failure analysis and we are doing controls and whatnot. What else there to do? When you talk to the doctors, you would say, you know, what if this goes wrong? What if this happens? Where is that being kept? So you talk to different people and they have a different understanding of risk. The only function which is kind of owning it in our organizations is the quality function, but mostly by default. Many people don't even have a risk function as a dedicated function. Big companies do have it now at the enterprise level. So we are not structured for handling risk as a discipline. We are structured to handle R&D as a discipline, regulatory as a discipline, quality as a discipline, but risk cuts across all everything. So we're not structured for that. And our perception generally is it is something we need to do for regulatory compliance. I think that is where the sort of mindset needs to change a little bit in our current world.
So yeah, I mean, that makes so much sense. So for the listeners right now who are thinking, man, that makes sense as well. What are some of the low-hanging fruits that teams can go after, you think, in an effort to continue to improve their risk management programs or their procedures?
Sure thing, Mitch. That's a great question. And I want to first start by saying that it's not that we are not doing risk management. We are doing a lot of things correctly. It's just that we could do them a lot more better, a lot more efficient way. Right. And the first thing that we could do is really understand the basic terminology and key concepts. This is one of the things I found to be lacking in the industry, a basic awareness. And because of that confusion, we have made our procedures very complex and burdensome. So the first thing we could do is really understand the basic terminology, key concepts, and then see how it applies to our process. So we can write the procedures that accurately reflect what we do, right? And be able to communicate effectively with people. The second thing we could do is use some standard tools, which we can build on our own, very easy to build. As an example, we should be building some standard harm tools, harm terms, a standard harms list, or a standard hazards list. We could create some standard forms and templates that can be used, you know, to build the next product that is similar to an existing product, not starting from scratch, but actually 80% of the information is already available in those standardized tools. We could do that. The third thing we could do, I think, is learn to utilize our complaints data a lot better than we are doing today and feed that information back into our design and development process. Before we start our risk assessments for any new product, you know, in most cases, these are sort of second generation, third generation products from existing products. We should be looking at where we have been. We should be looking at the adverse events data, which is publicly available on similar devices. Use that information to create this first cut of your risk assessments even before you start your development. Wouldn't that be nice? So I think we could do a lot of things just to even make our current processes even more efficient and even better than what we are doing today.
Yeah, it's funny. For most regulatory strategies, you look for a predicate device, yeah, right? And so in essence, what you're saying is, look, we've got predicates all over the place internally for risk management. A lot of what you're saying, and this is no offense to you, but a lot of this sounds common sense. Why do you think this isn't common practice?
I think that if people became aware of them, they would actually do it. Mitch, let's recognize the fact that we are all very busy. We have a lot on our plate and we have very tight deadlines. We have very tight timelines. And this is where I actually encourage our risk practitioners to take on a leadership role. And by that, what I mean is, it's not just about knowing the stuff about risk management, what is required, what is regulatory requirement, but be able to communicate that to other people in a way that helps them do their job better. So I don't think people are ignoring it on purpose. They're just not aware of it. And it comes across in my conversations with so many. I talk to a lot of people one-on-one, by the way. Comes across so clear to me that we are lacking a basic understanding of key terms and concepts, and we don't have time to even kind of talk about them or really communicate that effectively to our peers. And I think risk practitioners can actually make a big impact in their organizations by really leveraging the common sense that is out there. And like I said before, Mitch, we are doing an awesome job in our industry. We are not deficient by any means, right? We make great products. We have good compassion for our patients. We are very committed. There's nobody that I know of that, you know, doesn't wake up excited going to work in a medical device company. They're super excited about it because they're so mission driven. We just need help. I think we just need help and awareness.
You know, given that this is a show with the premise of all things talent within the industry, you know, it would be foolish of me not to kind of tie this back to talent. A lot of folks are coming to us always asking, hey, what would you, I really want to continue to develop my career and rise up through the ranks, whether that's taking on more individual contributor responsibility or, you know, having for more formal leadership. And a lot of these folks that we have conversations with are, of course, in regulatory and quality. But what a great opportunity if you can become a risk expert and a really seen as a center of expertise for the rest of your colleagues and cross-functional partners. What a huge value add as it is right there. And to go back to your point, yeah, not a lot of organizations have a formal, a separate disciplinary function for risk. It's usually tied in,
yeah,
right, with quality and regulatory and compliance in general, kind of where it transcends that line. So you make a lot of good points there. I want to move on. I want to talk to you about something that's very relevant to our industry right now, and that's the QMSR. And you and I share a lot of mutual friends and colleagues in the industry who post different things from the FDA on a regular basis as far as what's in the QMSR and how does it differ from QMS. What do you think are going to be the biggest challenges from a risk perspective when it comes to companies actually implementing these QMSR changes?
So this is going to happen in a little bit over a little bit longer term, what I'm going to share with you. So I'm not going to talk as much about what they need to do from a documentation purposes or becoming compliant and becoming ready with that. I will not talk about that, but I will talk about what impact it will have in the practice, in the day-to-day work, right? Let's face it, we still work in a very siloed environment. And many times quality is the function which is going from one function to another, trying to get the jobs done and collecting everything and making it, you know, all in one place. I think the rubber will hit the road when we have to actually practice risk management across our quality system, because that's what QMSR is all about. Now, you will say many companies have already been doing ISO 13485 for many, many years. Yes, I know that, right? And the foundation of QMSR is ISO 13485, which is the global standard. So what's new, Naveen? What are you saying? What's new? Well, I worked in an organization that was ISO 13485 certified and compliant for many, many years. And I know when it comes to day-to-day practice, we are not using a process-based approach to quality management system. We are not making risk-based decisions. We are not very used to doing that kind of risk-based control on the supplier side, for example. How many problems we have today that we face that can be traced back to, let's say, a component supplied by somebody else or a raw material supplied by somebody else. And we go and issue a supplier corrective action, move on, do supplier audits and move on. But we are not really fixing things. So I think what's going to happen, and I'm suspecting this is what will drive it, because FDA until now has been operating under QSR. So when they inspect you, They go very deep, by the way. They can take as much time they need. They go very deep, but they cannot write you explicitly about deficiencies in a risk management system. They can't, because in the QSR, it doesn't appear anywhere except one place.
Yes.
Now, people might say, oh, it's in the preamble. That's what FDA intends to, but they can write you up, right? And I have seen many warning letters, Mitch, which makes me believe what I'm saying might happen, where FDA is citing evidence from their analysis of, let's say, calculations they did for risk and which led to wrong decisions, miscalculations. I did a case study on this very recently, where a simple calculation mistake led to wrong decisions in their HHE process. They didn't write them because they didn't write them for risk management-related issue. They wrote them under a CAPA for not following their own procedure. Now, what will be the response for a company when they see a finding like that? Go fix a CAPA procedure, right? But that's not the fundamental problem. The fundamental problem is how we are practicing risk management and helping and using it to make decisions. That is where people will find it very difficult, because we are not practicing it. We are just writing it up. We are documenting everything and moving on. So in the world of QMSR, when FDA comes into your organization, and this is just pure speculation on my part, because, you know, I've not worked for the FDA. But I've been in audits. I've been in inspections. I know how they think. I think when they come into your door and go over your risk management practices and how you're making decisions, under ISO 13485, I believe they will be able to write you more explicitly about that. If that makes sense to you, I think that'll be the biggest adjustment for people in QMSR.
Yeah, and I made a mistake. I said QMS instead of QSR versus QMSR. But with that, Naveed, I think you're talking about a much more foundational, fundamental aspect to all this, this whole show. And that is, it's a culture of risk management versus checking the boxes and completing risk management compliance procedures.
That's right.
And I think if you can live risk and believe in what's going on as an actual philosophy and how it's integrated into all your activities across the organization versus we've got a checklist and did this team do this? Did this team do this? That's a whole different mindset. And I think that is probably the fundamentals and the foundation of what your program is.
Let's talk risk.
Well, I really appreciate this, man. This is awesome. And I know how passionate you are about this, which is why I wanted you to be on the show. Talk a little bit more about two things. One, what are people getting from your content on Fridays or from your program on your website? And two, how can people get in touch?
Sure thing. So first of all, more than 80% of the content that I put out there is free for everybody, because my core mission is to help people achieve success with risk management in a practical way, right? So a lot of the work I do is for free. And you mentioned Friday conversations. They are happening every Friday. It's a LinkedIn live audio event. So you just have to show up at 11 Eastern and be a part of the conversation. And if you miss it, the podcast recordings are available on my Let's Talk Risk website. Having said that, I also produce a lot of very high value, sort of deep research-based paid content for subscribers who want to gain that level of competence. And there are a variety of things that are available to people, case studies I mentioned. I write articles about ISO 14971 fundamental principles, right? Things about how to do P1, P2 calculations with detailed examples, right? Case studies of warning letters and recalls that we talked about, which I also do once a month webinar for paid subscribers, where we go deep into a risk management related topic and get people's questions answered. This is how you learn. You learn by talking about these issues. And we do that on a monthly basis, right? We also do a podcast on a monthly basis for paid subscribers, which are with a very deep dive conversation. And finally, I would say just now I have launched a very dedicated section on QMSR. From a risk point of view. So your question about what challenges people will find under QMSR, that'll be our theme. That'll be our focus. First, understand what QMSR is. Many people may not be familiar with that. But then over time, we'll be building more content from a risk perspective under QMSR. So I think that could be very useful to people who want to take the next step. And I know many people are not ready to commit, or some may not be even able to afford it. For that, I have a lot of opportunities for people to take advantage of this content in many other different ways. So I just encourage people to engage with me, become a part of this conversation, and reach out to me, and I'll make it, you know, easy for them to benefit from these sources.
I think it was Gary Vaynerchuk who said, give away your best stuff for free, because if you give away your best stuff for free, people are going to wonder, what the heck is this guy charging? Yeah. Like, if it's this good for free, what is behind the gate, so to speak? So yeah, man, you're the guy. You're the guy when it comes to risk, and the industry should know that, because I know how much value you're putting out, and I know how good of quality your content is on the free side, let alone what's going on behind the paid gate. So thank you so much for being here. If it's cool with you, we'll put a link to your website. We'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile and encourage folks that are interested in risk to reach out to you.
Thank you so much, Mitch.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.